One of the most misunderstood svarim in Nach is Sefer Yonah. Typically, people look at Sefer Yonah as it's something read in Yom Kippur, but Yonah himself obviously was no great individual. He tried to run away from Hashem, etc. And if you get a chance to look through the Rishonim, you see quite the opposite. You see that Yonah was a tremendous, tremendous individual, and everything that he did throughout that Sefer reflected his greatness, his Kedusha, and his closeness to Hashem. Most of the Rishonim explain that Hashem appeared to Yonah and told him that, I want you to go to Nineveh. But Yonah understood why he was being sent to Nineveh. He understood that the Klal Yisrael were not where they should be, the Jewish nation had sinned, and if it could be, Hashem felt that it was appropriate to exile them, to throw them out of the land. Nineveh was the capital city of Ashur. Ashur was to be the Malchus, the kingdom that was to exile the Jewish people. However, if it could be, Hashem had a problem. That problem was that Nineveh had turned l'ra. They had turned badly, to such an extent that the Midas HaDin, the attribute of Din, demanded that they be destroyed. Hashem needed them to be around to exile the Jewish nation, and they had sinned, so Hashem wanted to send a Navi to get them to do tshuva so they could be around, so they could exile the Jewish people. When Yonah understood this, he turned to Hashem and said, Hashem, you are the master of the universe, you understand all, you have a plan, but count me out. If this plan involves hurting my nation, if this plan involves my being a part of creating the whip, creating the nation that will exile my people, I can't be a part of it. And Yonah tried to run away from the Nevuah. The Abarbanel explains one of the reasons that we're told, say, for Yonah, and one of the reasons why it became part of Nach is to see Tokif Chasiduso, the tremendous righteousness, the holiness of Yonah. In any case, Yonah understood that in that time of history, Nevius prophecy was only given in Eretz Yisrael. Hashem had appeared to him and told him that Hashem wanted Yonah to be a prophet, but Hashem had not yet given Yonah the actual prophecy, and therefore Yonah attempted to run out of Eretz Yisrael, because if he leaves Israel, Hashem won't give him the actual prophecy, and he will therefore not have to actually go to Nineveh. He won't be a part of hurting his nation. And for that reason, Yonah ran away. He ran to Yafo, he ran to the port city, and as soon as he got there, the Pasuk says he found a boat. And a very unusual expression, because the Nach says he found a boat there that was heading towards Tarshish, and the Medrash Tanchum explains to us what was happening. That boat wasn't there. That boat was actually 2 days' distance out at the sea, and Hashem sent a powerful wind that forced that boat against the will of the commander to actually come back to the port city of Yafo. And when Yonah saw this boat miraculously appear right then, says the Medrash Tanchuma, Samach Belibo, he was very happy. Va'amar, and he said, Akshav ni yodea shedatayim yusheres, now I know that my ways are right in front of Hashem. And he was very, very happy. However, continues the Medrash Tanchuma, V'hu lo yada, he didn't know, Yonah didn't know, Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu mesavev adav al adiyo shesham kvodo. Yonah didn't recognize that really Hashem had a much bigger plan, and that really Hashem still was going to have Yonah do the shlichas, become the messenger against his will. And I believe there's a tremendous lesson for us in this Medrash Tanchuma. You see, Yonah was an extraordinarily righteous individual. And Yonah saw something. He saw Hashem. He saw Hashem bringing about a miracle. This boat suddenly appears, and he learned pshat. He understood why it was. He understood it was happening because Hashem was agreeing to him. Hashem was allowing him not to go on this mission, and therefore Hashem brought a boat to bring him away from Israel. However, he was wrong, dead wrong, the exact opposite. Hashem was bringing that boat specifically to put Yonah on it so that Yonah would be brought out to the sea, so that the sea would threaten to destroy the boat, so that Yonah would have to be thrown overboard, Yonah would be swallowed by the fish, and everything else that was to ensue was to happen. You see, Yonah saw Hashem. He saw it was Bashert, but he learned wrong pshat. He learned the wrong definition of what was happening. And I believe that this Medrash Tanchuma is very, very important for life. Why? Because many a time in life, we'll see something. It's Hashem. It's Bashert. We'll see events. They're orchestrated. They're clearly directed by Hashem. And there's no question in our mind that it's Hashem. And that part is correct. But it's the next step that oftentimes gets us into trouble. Therefore, Hashem is telling me, and we reach our conclusions. You see, the fact that it's Bashert is true. It's from Hashem. Hashem directed this. Hashem brought it about. But why, what Hashem wanted, what Hashem intends, remains a mystery. And the proof in the pudding is that Yonah was a Navi, a man of tremendous righteousness, a man who was close to Hashem, a man of tremendous Das Torah, and he learned the exact wrong shot in the event. Seeing it's Bashert, seeing that it's Hashem, doesn't mean that therefore you know why Hashem brought it. And the reason why I'd like to introduce this concept before we begin the shmooze is because we have just lived through an experience that for most of us is something that we haven't been through, we haven't seen in our lives. The recent hurricane, the sudden strange coming together of many forces, it's something that was so unexpected because it required two hurricanes to just happen to meet. The point where they met just happened to be landfall. That landfall area just happened to be the heavily populated eastern seaboard. And many, many communities were badly damaged, hurt. Lives were lost. Property was damaged. People, the minor part of it is people lost power. People had inconvenience. The major part is that people lost their homes, their belongings, possessions. People are bereft and left out often on the streets. And the question that comes to mind is why? Why did Hashem do it? Why did Hashem bring it? It's clearly Hashem. You could see it. And you could see it clearly. And the damage is great. I spoke to a Menahel who brought down his yeshiva to help out in one of the communities. He said they went into a Beis Medrash and the Svarim shelves had gotten soaked. But soaked means they were underwater. And the books had expanded so that they were jammed into the bookshelves. They had to take shovels and smash them out. He said in that Beis Medrash alone, $200,000 worth of Svarim were destroyed. And again, that's but the small part of it, because people have lost homes, lost everything they've had. And the question is why? Why would Hashem do this? Why would Hashem bring this? And the reason why I began with this Medrash Tanchuma is because once upon a time we had Nevi'im. Eliyahu Navi, Elisha, Nehemiah, Ezra. The job of a Navi is to receive a prophecy from Hashem, come back and say, Ko Amar Hashem, so has Hashem said, this is the reason why. With the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the era of prophecy has ended, and we no longer have Nevi'im. And therefore, for any human being to say, I know why, is not just audacious, it's foolish. You don't know why. I don't know why. No one knows why. We can guess, we can postulate, we can make assumptions, but at the end of the day, all it will be is my assumption, my guess versus your thought, and the reality is that we don't know why. And again, until you have a Navi, you can't know why. So when we live through an experience like this, and we certainly are looking for the why would Hashem bring it? The first thing I think that we have to keep in mind is the fact that we're not going to really know, we'll never get a clear definition. Now, that may bring us to a sense of, well, okay, so if we can't know, I guess it's Meis Hashem, Hashem brought it, I can't know why, and let me just go on about my life as it was before. And that would be a very foolish perspective to take, and I'll share with you why. The Rambam in Hilchos Tainis in Yagdom explains there is a mitzvah asei doraisa. There's a full mitzvah when a tzara comes to the tzibur. When a calamity, when a catastrophe strikes the tzibur, it is a mitzvah lizok lifnei Hashem. It's a mitzvah to cry out to Hashem. It's a mitzvah to daven. It's a mitzvah to bring out the chatzotzros, the shofros, and the various things involved in doing tshuva. And then the Rambam says something very, very powerful. He says, if a person doesn't introspect, if a person doesn't ask, why did this happen? This is derech achzorius. He is an achzor. He is a cruel person. If a person doesn't learn from events that transpire, if a person looks at a community that was hurt, that was damaged, and doesn't ask why, says the Rambam, he's a cruel person. Now, you might wonder why he's a cruel person. I'd imagine the Rambam should say that he's a person who's not thinking, he's not open to understanding, he's not looking for the truth. Why does the Rambam say he's a cruel person? But if you read carefully, the Rambam explains why he's a cruel person. Because Hashem brought this for a reason. This wasn't a mikra, this wasn't a happenstance. Hashem brought this, and Hashem brought this for a reason, and the reason is for us to change, for us to grow. And if a person doesn't look at this, doesn't take the lesson, doesn't change, then he's cruel. Why? Because then Hashem is going to bring more suffering, more difficulties, because until we get it, Hashem will bring more and more and more. And therefore, if you don't learn the lessons, you're cruel, because what's going to happen is worse. You're going to bring more punishments upon yourself. So for a person to say, listen, we don't have Nevi'im, we can't know, so I'm just going to continue about my merry ways. The Rambam says that's cruelty. It's not just folly. It's not just foolish. You're actually hurting yourself because Hashem is sending a message. But the problem is, what's the message? What is the message? And it doesn't take a tremendous introspection to see many messages that can be learned. There are many issues that we as individuals, that we as a community need to work on. There are many things that require focus. Baruch Hashem, in many ways, the Klai Yisrael is doing phenomenally. We're doing very, very well in many areas. And there are also many, many things that need improvement. But again, which one in particular? What's the nekuda? What's the point? We're not going to know. So where does it leave us? Where does it leave us if the Rambam says we have to learn and we don't have a Navi to teach us what to learn? How do we deal with it? How do we grapple with this issue? How do we deal with it? How do we learn? So I'd like to share with you that there is something that we all can take from this. And while, again, it may not be at all the cause, it may not be the reason, but I believe it's a lesson that's so fundamental that whatever the reason Hashem brought, this perspective will help us, will change us, and is something that we can grow from tremendously. And to explain this perspective, let me start with an observation. Many years ago, I was at a chasana. I was single, I was a young man, and it was a wedding actually in a shul, a very large, wide, long shul. And we were at the chuppah, and I don't know if they do this today as much as then, but after the chassan broke the glass, all the bachrim came running forward to give the chassan a hug. And because it was a delay, the guy started doing the up and down. The up and down. What's the up and down? The up and down is basically you're all nailed in place. You can't move forward. You can't move back. So the guys are moving up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down, kind of bouncing, you know, kind of bending the knees up and down. At a certain point, the Rav comes into the group and says, stop, stop, stop. He grabs one guy, grabs, stop, stop. No one knew what the problem was. No one knew what was going on. After he stopped the whole commotion, later on he explained. You see, that shul was built in the 60s on two long steel girders. The support of the entire building was two powerful, strong steel girders that went across the length of the shul. Each of those girders rested, ended on a concrete pillar. But you see, the girder just touched the end of the concrete pillar. And when these guys were 200 guys moving up and down, up and down, up and down, they were at the middle point of that girder. And that steel was bending in the middle, bending in the middle, bending in the middle. And because it was just resting on the concrete supports, had they continued, it could have easily slipped off the concrete support. The entire girder that was supporting the floor would have fallen off its support, and the entire floor with all of its occupants would have crashed into the basement. No one knew that. No one understood the construction. The Rav did, and he stopped the problem before it began. Here's an observation. When was the last time you walked into a wedding hall and said, I'm above the basement. Maybe the floor is going to come crashing down. Maybe I'll end up dying because the floor will come down and the ceiling on top of me. When was the last time you went into a skyscraper, found yourself on the 86th floor and said, I'm way high up here, 86 floors, maybe it's going to all come crashing down. When was the last time you got into an elevator and walked in and said, maybe there's no cab, huh? You know, maybe I'm just going to like step forward and just plummet to my death below. When was the last time you walked on a sidewalk and said, oh my goodness, maybe it'll open up and I'll fall to my death? We don't have any such fears. Not that such fears aren't justified, because if you read the newspapers and you pay attention to what goes on, things happen. People walk down streets innocently enough and cranes fall on them. And people get in their cars to drive and drunk drivers plow into them. People go to the hospital to visit someone and lone microbes invade their system and they catch a deathly illness. People die every day of the week, all the time. People are dying left, right, and center, or getting injured or getting hurt. But we don't fear. We're very secure. We're very confident that those things won't happen to me. And the question is, why? Why am I so secure, and why am I so confident that these things won't happen? I'll plug my microwave oven into the electricity. I'm not afraid of an electrical overload. I'm not afraid that, you know, the wires that run through the walls will start heating up and will suddenly cause a flame to emerge from the walls and I'll be toast. I'm not afraid that there's going to be an overload in my circuit breakers. Now, it's a little funny because, again, these things happen on a regular basis. And if you're not sure I'm right, I'll share with you a fact that I think is well worth understanding. If you study U.S. history, in recent times, the Vietnam War was considered a horrible, horrible loss of life. Because in that war, 50,000 U.S. soldiers died. A huge number. If I ask you how many people die on the U.S. highway system every year, the answer is about 50,000. It means about as many people die every year on the U.S. highway systems as died in all the war years in Vietnam. Now, do you think about that when you get behind the wheel of a car? Oh, my goodness, 50,000 people die on the highway. I'm staying on the local streets. Oh, well, sorry to tell you, but there's a greater incident of car accidents on local streets than on highways. Oh, I'm going back on the highway. I'm not driving. We get behind the wheel of our cars, and we drive. We get into airplanes that fly 500 miles an hour, 35,000 feet in the air, and we're not afraid that they're going to come crumbling in on us. We have tremendous, tremendous confidence. We walk the streets at night. We go to sleep at night comfortably. We believe in everything that's here. And I'd like to share with you why it is that we believe. The Chovos of Vovos in Shar Bitochen says something very powerful. He says, "Umi she'eino boteach b'Hashem," if someone doesn't trust in Hashem, "boteach b'zuloso," trust in something else. You see, a human being must trust. By nature, we must trust, because if we don't trust, we'd be paranoid. If I were ever completely rational, if I were ever totally, totally intellectual, and I asked myself, what are the odds, I'd be racked with fear, because things happen. People get sick. People die. Things occur on a regular basis. And if I were ever totally, completely clear-headed and logical, I'd be filled with fear. The reason I'm not is not because I'm such a Baal Bitachon, but because I trust. I trust because by nature I trust. I trust because that's the way Hashem made us. Because if I didn't trust, I'd be paranoid, I'd be filled with fear, I wouldn't be able to function. I remember I had a first grade teacher. She was, excuse me. She was an older woman, and before she would open a door, she would pull out a handkerchief and put the handkerchief on the door. Why? Because children might have coughed into their hands. They might have sneezed. They might have breathed. They might have put their germs all over. When you breathe out, millions and millions of germs. If I were ever really completely logical, I'd be racked with fear and I wouldn't be able to function. To allow us to function, Hashem gave us this innate capacity of trust. We trust. We trust that the current situation will be forever. We trust in the U.S. economy. We trust in law and order. We trust in sidewalks. We trust in building inspectors. We trust that when we get into that elevator, it will function and it will bring me to where I am supposed to go. We have such innate natural trust that it's remarkable. And the only time you find out what it is that you trust in and how much you trust in it is when it fails you. When you're at that wedding hall and suddenly you realize, oh my goodness, the floor could have collapsed. When you're doing very well in business and suddenly there's a threat, whether it be a competitor, whether it be the U.S. economy starts dipping, then you find out quite how much it is that you relied on those things. And I believe that this is a yesod that's very, very fundamental. Why? Because most of us would like to grow. And of course I would love to trust in Hashem. Of course I would love to rely on Hashem. Of course I would love to see Hashem, trust in Hashem. That'd be great. But the problem is, to be honest with you, it's just not natural to me. It's just not something I do easily. I'm a self-reliant person. I'm independent. I would love to trust in Hashem, but it's just not within my nature. And that line is sheker. It's not true. It is your nature to trust. It is 100% your nature to have bitachon. The only question is, in whom do you trust? In what do you trust? If you didn't trust, you wouldn't be able to function. You'd be paranoid. You'd be locked in your bedroom, shaking with fear. But you trust in many, many things. You trust in law and order. You trust in the emergency medical system. You trust that that which is now will continue to be, and life will continue as it is. And again, the reason why that's such a yesod is because then it allows us to understand something that the Chovas Avava shares with us. He says that anything you trust in other than Hashem will eventually fail you. Anything that you come to rely on other than Hashem at some point in your life will fail you. Listen, I'm young and healthy. I can take care of myself. Okay, that's true now, but for how long? I'm a brilliant businessman. I have wisdom and understanding. That's true now until the entire economy tanks. Yeah, but I have an MBA. Don't worry about me. Yeah? And that's true until your entire industry collapses. And anything that a person trusts in, whether it be their health, their wealth, their wisdom, their abilities, whether it be the economy, whether it be buildings, whatever you trust in at some point will fail you. And again, the reason why that's so critical to us is because when you realize that, explains the Chovas Avavos, then you could take the next step. You begin to realize that that which I trust in is false. That which I trust in is empty. I can't be guaranteed health. I can't be guaranteed long life. I can't know that just because I had my car go through every safety inspection imaginable, that I won't be hit by another car who jumps the meridian. And once you recognize that anything you trust in other than Hashem is false, then you could do that most difficult job of moving your trust and taking your trust from that which you used to believe in and transferring it to Hashem. But you see, it's a transference of trust. You don't have to learn how to trust. By nature, you trust. That's intuitive. That's instinctive. If not for trust, you'd be paranoid. All you have to do is ask yourself, in what do I trust? In whom do I trust? And when you ask those penetrating questions, you see that that which I trust in is false, is empty, can't take care of me. And then you easily shift your trust from those empty, vain things to Hashem. And that is one of the greatest growth processes that a human being can go through. A few years ago, we went through a major recession, and the world was unglued. I spoke to a man on Rosh Hashanah who said, Baruch Hashem, it's Rosh Hashanah, I can't look at my portfolio, because he was losing so much money so quickly that he said, Baruch Hashem, I can't look. Many people were hurt, and again, it wasn't as much that they were hurt financially as much as that which they believed in so firmly became unglued. The U.S. economy. The U.S. economy was heading down. I remember when Citibank was selling for $1 a share. Citibank is one of the world-leading banks. And it was selling for $1 a share, and most people wouldn't buy it because the banks themselves looked like they were going bankrupt. Now, the bank can't go bankrupt. That can't happen, right? Well, it was on the verge. And when you live through an event like that, and you live through a time like that, what you see more than anything is how much I trusted in the mighty dollar, how much I trusted in the U.S. economy, how much I trusted in industry, production. And then you see the next step, how foolish it is to trust in anything that passes, it just disappears. I remember reading about the great market crash of 1929, the real depression. And businessmen, very, very wealthy, successful businessmen, when they lost it all, jumped out of windows, killed themselves. And oftentimes, if you read their lines, it wasn't so much that they lost their wealth. It wasn't that they lost their money, because you could always rebuild. It was that the banks themselves, the dollar, became worthless. Everything they trusted in, everything they believed in, everything that was real and solid just disappeared. The whole world came apart. And what you see in those moments of crisis is what it is that you trust in, what it is that you believe in, and quite how much you believe in it. And with that as a perspective, I think it's appropriate for us to look at the recent events and ask ourselves what we can learn from these events. And I think this message is very, very powerful. Rahman al-Aslan, when you lose your home, but it means it floods, the water starts coming into the basement, and it starts rising and rising, but I don't mean a half an inch or an inch, by the footful, and it comes higher and higher, and you see fish. You see the Atlantic Ocean in your basement, and it starts rising and gets higher, and you climb up, and now you're in your living room, and it's still rising. That's a very, very unsettling experience. And it clearly shows us what we humans fall prey to. I trust that such things would never happen. I trust that my house is secure. I trust that my health is here. I have been to the Atlantic Ocean countless times. Never once do I remember saying, oh my goodness, what if it overflows? It could easily have a brother who lives a block and a half from the ocean. What would happen? Why didn't that thought cross my mind? I wish I could stand here and say it's because I have such emunah, because Hashem is so powerful and clear in my mind that I couldn't dream of it happening. I don't think that's real. I believe the real reason is because the oceans don't exceed the bounds. Maybe if I'm a mom and I say because Hashem created that way, but the bottom line is the Pacific stays where it stays, Atlantic stays where it stays, the Delaware stays where it stays, and that's the way it is. And that's Sheker. That's the way it is because Hashem created, maintains, and orchestrates physicality. That's the way it is because Hashem deems it appropriate for it to be there, and the minute that Hashem says it shall no longer be there, it changes radically, totally, and completely. And the reason why we're so secure, we have such difficulty seeing Hashem, we have such difficulty relying on Hashem, is because we trust in so many things. And when your reality becomes unglued, when you live through an experience like this and you see, wait a minute, that which I trusted in really isn't so reliable, the electric grid. What do you mean the electric grid goes out? How could that be? How could it be that I'm not going to have heat? How could it be I'm not going to have electricity? How could it be? And if it is, I'll go to my uncle, my brother, my cousin. Come on, I'll go down a block. I'll go, what do you mean, the whole city? What, the whole community? How could it be? How could it be that the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel could be flooded from floor to ceiling? 23 million gallons of seawater. How could it be? But it happened. And when it happens, what you're supposed to look at and say is, I get it. Hashem is the creator of the world. Hashem runs the world. Hashem orchestrates every particle of this existence. And I recognize that the reason why the sun rises in the morning, sets at night, is because Hashem deems it to be. And no other reason. And anything else that I've trusted in, law and order, common decency of man, goodness, is going to prove to be false. It's not worthy of my trust. And the only thing worthy of my trust is Hashem. And I believe there's one more step that might be even more important. The one reality that we human beings get so locked into, and it's so difficult for us to move out of, is the reality that the current situation will be forever. I will always be in this moment in time. I will always feel as I feel. I will always be as I am. this current situation will be forever. Now, obviously, I know that's ridiculous. I know that every human being gets older. I know that all things change. I even know that everyone dies. I don't know anyone who shook hands with the Gra. I don't know anyone who said hello personally to George Washington. Every human being dies. So I know intellectually that it's not true. But that's intellectually. In my operating world, in my real emotions and feelings, the current situation will be forever. And when you live through a situation that really changes your reality and you realize that, oh my goodness, that which we trusted in isn't reliable, that which I thought never would be is, suddenly you're able to take the next step. Things change, things occur, and there will come a time when I will no longer be on this earth. There'll come a time, hopefully I'll get first to be an older man, then an older man still, hopefully a very old man, but there will come a time when I will leave my current situation. And that reality is the most single significant reality a human being has to always grab hold of. That's the most empowering, powerful reality that can literally change your life, and it's the most difficult to grip. If you'd like a lesson to learn from the current events, look at it and say, I get it. I see what I trusted in. I see what I relied on. I see how much I trust that there'll always be plenty. My pantry will always be filled with food, drink. There'll always be gasoline. What do you mean gasoline shortage? Not in our world, certainly not in our time. And all of a sudden you see that there are two-hour lines for gas. You don't have heat. You don't have electricity. You don't know what's going to be. And you realize how much I trusted in that which is not trustworthy. You take the step of saying, I get it. And you start moving your trust from that which is foolish and empty and start learning to trust in Hashem. And hopefully you take the next step as well. And you say to yourself, I get it. The current situation will change. Not maybe, not possibly, 100% Vaday will change. I will no longer be here. And I will answer to Hashem for every great thing that I did and everything that I didn't do and for those things that I shouldn't have done. And if you'd like to fulfill the Rambam's definition of the mitzvah of Sei Deraisa, all you have to do is focus on that point. Because when you focus on that, I guarantee whatever the exact lesson is, you'll grow. Do we all have individual areas to work on 100%? Do we have areas as a community to work on 100%? But when you focus on the fact that the only thing worthy of trust is Hashem, when you focus on the fact that I'm here for a few short years to grow and accomplish, and at the end of my days I'll answer to Hashem for everything I've done, everything else is easy to then put into place. It's easy to look at your life and say, okay, what should I change? What should I work on? What area should I grow in? And again, I believe that this is something that's very worthwhile to think about, contemplate, and a lesson to learn from the recent events. But I'd like to share with you one more perspective, one more understanding that I think we can gain from living through these events. After HaKadosh Baruch Hu split the Yam, the Jewish nation comes out on one side, and they saw the Mitzrayim, they saw their lords and taskmasters washed up on the shore dead. They realized the reality. Hashem created the world. Hashem runs the world. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, redeemed us from the bondage of Egypt, and now we are free men. Az Yashir Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu led the Klal Yisrael in a shira, in a song, thanksgiving, praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And after that, Vatikach Miriam HaNeviah Achos Arnas Atof B'yada, Miriam, the sister of Aaron, took a drum, a tof, in her hand, and all the women followed her, with drums and tambourines. The women went out with drums and tambourines to also sing their shira, to also praise Hashem. Rashi's bothered by the problem. Where in the world did they get the drums from? You know, they just went through the Yamsuf. They just escaped Egypt. They're runaway slaves. They took their kids, their clothing, their food, whatever they had, but where'd the drums come from? Where'd the tambourines come from? Explains Rashi. Muftachos hayetzit konias shebedor. The righteous women of the generation were muftach, had tremendous, they were in their mind guaranteed. They had bitachon. Shekadosh Baruch Hu oslem nisim, that Hashem would do miracles for them. And therefore they took out drums from Mitzrayim. You see, the righteous women of the generation said, wait a minute, Hashem is taking us out. There's going to be more difficulties. There are going to be more challenges. Hashem obviously is going to save us. And we're going to have to rejoice. We need the tools. We need drums, tambourines. Come on, girls, let's go. Let's go. Take whatever we need, because we're going to have to celebrate. And if you think about this Rashi, it's a pella. It's amazing. Why? Because keep in mind that this was a slave nation, oppressed, tortured, beaten. Evan Ezra explains why were the Jewish nation afraid of the Mitzrim? According to Evan Ezra, only 600 chariots had chased them down, and it was 600,000 men. 1,000 men to a chariot, you could destroy their nation. You could kill the Mitzrim. Explains to Evan Ezra, because from their youth, they were brought up as slaves. And a slave looks up to his master with awe and trepidation. They couldn't fight against such a powerful foe, even though the Jews far outnumbered the Mitzrim. That slave mentality, that image in their mind, crippled them. So here are these people who were enslaved in bondage, and suddenly everything changes. Moshe says, we're leaving, let's go. Now keep in mind that the women had a lot of things to deal with. They had children, they needed food. The month didn't start until 30 days or so into the Midbar. The first meals, they brought their own food. They had to worry about diapers and water and clothing. They had to worry about taking all the wealth of Mitzrayim. Hashem guaranteed Avram the Jewish nation would leave with wealth, so they had to borrow all types of golden vessels, silver vessels. They had animals to take. There was a lot of tumult. How did these women think about the, oh, wait, we better take the, don't forget the tambourines, don't forget the drums. But more than that, you're going into a very dangerous situation. There are no 7-Elevens in the Midbar. There are no convenience stores. There are no gas stations. You're going out into a complete desolate area. No food, no water. It's a very frightening time. And the Bechors just died. All the firstborn of Mitzrayim were dying left, right, and center. Unfortunately, many Jews also died who weren't worthy of being redeemed. It was a very frightening time. How did these women think about taking the tupim and mochalos, the tambourines and the drums? I think that's what Rashi is teaching us. They were muftachos. If you'd like to know what real bitachon is about, it's clear, it's palpable. I can't wait to see how Hashem redeems us from this. I can't wait to see the Yeshua. There's a sense of joyfulness, a sense of celebration. Wow, I can't wait to see how Hashem takes us out of this. And I have to be ready. They knew that it would happen to such an extent that they have to have tambourines and drums because it's going to happen. I have to be ready. That's bitachon. That's powerful bitachon. That's when it's real. Not just words that we say, not just, you know, Mitzvah Hashem, Baruch Hashem, I hope. That's real bitachon. Powerful bitachon. And I think it's something that's very, very illustrative. You'll see it over and over, Dovin HaMelech. You'll see it over and over, the Avos. There was this sense of, I can't wait to see how Hashem gets us out of this. Dovin HaMelech had a life of trouble, trials, tribulations, enemies, and warfare, constantly being chased. And it was also a constant sense of, wow, I can't wait to see how Hashem redeems me. I can't wait to see the end of the story. And I believe that that's exactly what the women, the Tzadkaniyos HaDor, were thinking. And I believe that's exactly why they took out Tupim and Mecholos, because I can't wait to see how this ends. Real bitachon doesn't mean I know that this is going to have a happy ending. Real bitachon doesn't mean I know that all sick people are going to get well, all older people will live forever, everyone will make fortunes of money, and life will be rosy and peaches. That's not bitachon. Bitachon means I trust in Hashem. I trust that Hashem has a decree. I trust that Hashem loves me. I trust that Hashem knows better than I what's for my best. I trust that Hashem is right here. Do I know what's best? I don't know. Do I know where I need to be 2 years from now, 10 years from now? I certainly don't know. Do I know what's better for my family, my children? I couldn't tell you for the life of me. But Hashem does. And I rely on Hashem, I trust in Hashem, and I can't wait to see what Hashem has in mind. What do you mean? But I'm in big trouble now. Going into the Midbar, being taken out where there's no food, there's no water, there'll be enemies, there might be a Molech, there might be, who knows, Midian might attack, who knows what's going to happen. How could I have a confidence? I could have confidence because I saw Hashem through each one of the Makkahs. I saw Hashem month after month proving that He's present, He's involved, and therefore I walk out with joy in my heart. By the way, I said this over to my son, and he said to me, how come the men didn't have tupim mochal? How come men didn't have drums and tambourines? And I shared with him something interesting, because I don't think typically men are not on the same level of bitachon as women are. Women have a certain natural greater affinity for ruchnius spirituality, and I don't believe the men had that level. Rashi doesn't say the tzaddikim of the dor, the sitkonius of the dor. And it is easier for women on some levels to have a sense of trust, a sense of bitachon. But again, I think this particular point is very significant, very important for us right now. Because again, many people were inconvenienced. If you lost electricity for a day, a week, if you had to hook up a generator for a couple of Shabbosim, it's inconvenient. You had to suffer a little bit. It's cold. You had to walk around with flashlights. Okay. But there are many people who are hurt badly. Many people who are either physically injured, monetarily injured, their homes, their property, whatever it may be. And the question is, how do you deal with that? Okay, I get the lesson. As a community, we have to look, we have to grow, we have to understand that Hashem runs the world. We have to understand not to rely on things. We have to understand that the current situation will change. Okay, I get that. But how do I put my life back in order? How do I move forward? And I think that's exactly the answer. You have to look at the tzadkanias ador, you have to look at what real bitachon means, and you have to say, this is Hashem's will. But it's not because, drat, Hashem wants it, all right, well, whatever. Oh. It's the best thing in the world that could have happened. But it doesn't look good. It sure looks bleak. It sure looks black. That's to my mortal vision, my short-sighted understanding. And bitachon means that I trust in Hashem, I rely on Hashem, not that I know what's best for me, not that I know the end of the story, but that Hashem does, and that everything that Hashem does is for my best, that everything that Hashem orchestrates is for the good. And because I don't know the answer doesn't mean there's no answer, and because I don't know doesn't mean that Hashem doesn't have a very, very good reason for doing this. And understanding that is the next step. You see, it's not that difficult when you live through these kind of events to see the Yad Hashem. It hits you full force in the face. But the next step, understanding why Hashem does it, understanding why Hashem does this to a community, and specifically why Hashem does this to individuals, isn't so easy. And that's where real bitachon comes in. Real bitachon is predicated on the following understanding, that I am a human being, a mortal, limited human being, with limited understanding, limited sight, limited knowledge, and I don't know. And the Chovos Avavos makes a point, I've said it in a number of shmuzim, but it bears repeating, the most difficult part of our real, real bitachon as Hashem is knowing that Hashem knows better than I what's for my best. I mean, how could that be? I know what I need. I need to marry this woman. I need my kid to get into that class. I need this job. And then it turns out 2 years later, or 5 years later, 10 years later, that woman that you had to marry, you find out the word mentally unstable is an understatement. And that class that you had to have your child get into, it turns out there's another child in that class who would have been the worst possible influence on your son. That job that you had to get, the entire industry is shipped overseas. And if you live for a few years and you go about this thing called life, quickly you come to understand that we don't know. We don't have the capacity to know. We're not supposed to know. And then you can reach that very, very difficult conclusion. I get it. I am a nivra. I am a creation. Hashem is the creator. My job is to do my part, to go out there in the world and be active, use the world in the ways of the world, use the derech hateva, and to know that exactly that which Hashem decreed shall be, will be, not an iota less, not an iota more. And I trust in Hashem. What do you mean I trust in Hashem? Hashem brought me this patch. Look what Hashem did. How is it possible I could trust in Hashem? Hashem and destroyed my house and my belongings, and I don't have insurance, and I'm wiped out. I'm destroyed. My kids are sleeping in other people's homes and shelters. How could I trust in Hashem? Look what Hashem did to me. It's not easy. But if you watch a little child, when the father patches the little child, sometimes the father has to patch the child. And the child comes running back to the father, hugging him, because the child knows that his father loves him. And the child knows that the father is right. And the child knows that the father has his best interest at heart. That's the sense we have to have. When we live through trouble, live through situations, we have to know it's me'es Hashem and it's for the best. That it's from Hashem is clear, that it's for the best is not as obvious, and that's what you have to work on. And you have to ask yourself, in what do I trust? You have to look around and ask yourself, all of those things that I was so secure in, all of those things that I believed in, how secure are they? And when you do that, you start seeing that all the things that we by nature trust in aren't reliable. Do we trust? We have to trust. If we didn't trust, we'd be paranoid, filled with fear, and we'd be incapable of functioning. Hashem gave us this ability to trust so that we can function. But once you understand that, and then you understand that learning to trust in Hashem is easy. Why? Because all you have to do, as the Chavos Levavos explains, is look at the things that you trust in and see that they're false, they're empty, eventually they'll leave you. And when you live through a difficult situation and you see that reality will change, the current situation will absolutely, positively not be here forever, you have a different perspective, a different understanding, and you learn to transfer your trust from those empty, silly things to the only thing worthy of your trust, Hashem. And if you find it difficult because you got a patch, because you got hit, that's when you have to realize that we human beings don't know. And when these women were leaving Mitzrayim, they didn't know. They were heading out into difficult, dire straits, into a situation that had tremendous danger. But they used the past history. And they saw Dam Svardeya Kinim Orov. They saw the Makas. They saw the plagues. They saw Hashem's control. And they realized Hashem does these things for the best. Hashem is looking out for my interests. If I don't understand, doesn't mean Hashem doesn't. And with that, they came to a sense of trust, understanding. They relied on Hashem. And they brought out Tupim Mochalos. And I think these are the perspectives we have to think. Will we know exactly why? Yonah didn't know why. Yonah, a Navi, made a mistake. I think it would be audacious. I think it would be foolish for us to say, I know why. But we're not supposed to know why. So does that mean throw up my hands, just live through and don't think? No, because again, as the Rambam says, if you do that, you're an achzer, you're cruel. Because Hashem is sending you a message. So goodness gracious, what is the message? So the first message is, number one, who runs the world, who controls the world? In whom do you trust, in what do you trust? How long will the current situation last? And once you start thinking in those terms, once you start thinking in those ways, it'll become clear the areas that you need to work on, the areas that we as a community need to work on. It becomes clear because you have a different perspective in life. May Hashem grant us that we learn the lessons, that we never have to experience this again. May this be the last type of situation as this has been.